All right, here it is. Another episode of Tall Tales with Taylor Jones. We're coming to you live from Nashville, Tennessee, once again in the air condition because it's hot out here. It's too hot to be doing podcasts outside. If the sun and the humidity don't get you, the mosquitoes will. So we're trying to avoid all that altogether. Although, as mentioned before, it's air conditioned, but there are some spiders in here sometimes, and we have to kind of flick them every now and then occasionally. So keep your eye out over there about for some spiders. So I'll take the spiders over the mosquitoes, though, because the spiders pretty much do their own thing. The mosquitoes like to get all up in your business and, you know what I'm saying, suck your blood and all that. So we don't like that stuff. Exciting day today. I got my buddy Pat Killeron. How do you spell your last name? How do you say your last name, brother?
Supposed to be Killeron. Everyone says it other ways, and I just kind of let it. Just kind of let it roll.
Killeron. Okay. See, that's why you got to have these conversations to get it right from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
But I've heard it said the other way a couple times by Callie and them, and yeah. You know what I'm saying? They steered me wrong on that particular time. But this is me and Pat's first real conversation together and hanging out. We got connected last week, and he's got a record coming out soon, which we're going to talk in depth about on here. And figured it'd be cool to make a reason up to do a podcast together. So yeah, I don't really have much of an open today, man. There's not a whole lot. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I say this every week. I don't have much of an open, but oh, I will talk about this. We went to go see The Little Mermaid.
Yeah,
Circle Players. If you're not hip to the Circle Players,
I don't know what that
it's
is.
It's just it's a play company here in town. It's been around forever, like last 60 something years, whatever. I guess we're late to the party a little, but so one of Kyla's good buddies from college and guy that goes to church with us now, was playing the role of Prince Eric in the Little Mermaid, and it was dope. It was one of the best plays I've ever seen. Like the talent. Like one guy, the guy who was playing Sebastian was like moving to New York in a couple months, like in next month to
so
go.
Like he's
and like
a real.
Yeah.
It's like a real actor.
And he legit like acted like a crab. It was amazing. So Little Mermaid, I know that might make me a foofy man for even bringing this up.
Man.
But I like the Little Mermaid
now.
I
think that just means you're just confident.
Yeah.
You know?
I got no problem. It was over there at Luby Theater, which is out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And really nice small theater. It was great.
Yep.
Like, really great atmosphere
Isn't
to see
like
play.
Like a library or something?
Yep.
Yeah.
It worked out great, man. And, like, I remembered playing a talent show there when I was in high school. And then later, something else there that through the Metro Parks thing that me and my brother was doing at the time. And, anyway, it was really cool. Like, Memory Lane meets Little Mermaid and... Man, these kids are young. Like, the little girl that played Flounder was, like, 14 years old.
Dang.
But she was killing it. Like, prodigy actress little girl. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, what is this world?
I remember the only acting I ever did was, or the only one I can remember, was playing Friar Tuck
there
in high school in, like, ninth grade. And so they had me in, like, a bald cap and, like, a pillow, you know. And I was just really bad. And I've never been an actor, and I'm really bad, you know,
Dude.
Pretty much pretending to be anything. And so I just, you know, waddled around with this fat robe on and with my bald head. But I had really long hair, so it was, like, sticking out underneath the bald cap. So
you had, like, the skullet.
Yeah, it was like a redneck Friar Tuck or something like that.
Well, I'll tell you, man, I've never been able to be in a play either. Because I can't remember them lines. I cannot remember stuff.
See, I was always good at remembering the lines only because when I was a kid, you might know about this maybe, is I used to always do like what they called Bible quizzing when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
So like, you know, you memorize chapters or books of the Bible or whatever, and you have to answer this and that question or quote this and that verse. And so like, I guess that helped me being decent with memory. It was just the delivery that was definitely lacking on my part. But
brother, well... Hey, I got the delivery. I ain't got the memory. I cannot remember the lines. I struggle to remember that kind of stuff. But if
well,
I
we
can
should be talking
it,
about, I mean, it'll be dated by the time people hear this, but we should be talking about that basketball game.
Oh, did you watch it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too.
And
man.
I have to admit, I was bummed.
Well, I mean, boy, that storyline's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the Warriors from the word go. I just thought they could, you know, score more points than Cleveland ever could. And they did. And, I mean, the first two games, it was like, this is a sweep. And I had it. I was like, this is going to be a sweep. If I ever saw a sweep, this is going to be a sweep.
Yeah.
And, man, wrong. They played. They changed the way they defended. They was like, you know, hey, you're going to beat us with somebody else besides Curry and Thompson.
Yeah.
And they were leaving guys open. They were letting Draymond Green shoot, letting Harrison Barnes shoot. They didn't care. But them two playmakers were not going to score.
I mean, there's all sorts of controversy about all of it. And, like, we could go into that or not. But it definitely was rough for the Warriors when Draymond Green got suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever he was, just, you know, put on hold or whatever. But, man, and I was just actually writing with someone today, and we were talking all about that, and he was going into all the theories of the refs and the you know, behind-the-scenes rigging and whatever. And, you know, who knows what it really is. I know that the Cavs played a great game. Love him or hate him, LeBron is really good.
Yeah.
I personally am not, I think our personalities probably wouldn't mesh well, but he's an amazing player. And so, like, regardless, they definitely, they earned that win last night, whatever you think. But I definitely was rooting for the Warriors. And actually Reed Pittman was over last night, and we were both, you know, getting real excited when they started taking that lead. And I don't know, I was left a little bummed, but It was a good run.
Yeah, it's the same thing as like just a great. It's just like a great boxing match that you hate to see end. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it just really did good. And how do you at the end of the day, LeBron taking a championship back to Cleveland? That's great.
Yeah, the guy again that I was writing with. He was telling me that he was watching it at a bar last night, and that this other guy came up to him after and said, "Are you rooting for the Warriors?" And he had said, "Yeah." And this guy had said, "Man, you know, I'm sorry they lost. But I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and you know, I'm not necessarily a LeBron fan, but I haven't seen any team, you know, take a championship back, you know, and someone else is telling me I don't think they have done anything since like 63 or 64, mm-hmm. but this guy I was writing with was just saying like, man, that brought me some peace in the matter, just that he was so excited about his hometown, you know, finally getting, you know, something. And so, like, I'm sure all the people there were just stoked on it.
Yeah, I mean, and rightfully so. You know, he willed them back from 3-1, and hey, anybody that can win three straight games, you did it. You're better. You're the better team, straight up. And regardless of what 72-9 or whatever,
right,
73-9, like, doesn't matter. I mean, it's all about the playoffs. It's like, reminds me of the Patriots when they were undefeated and they got jobbed out in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
You know, they did that to themselves. I mean, they weren't the better team that day.
Right.
And they got beat. Anybody can get beat.
And that's the thing, is I was having this conversation recently about like how people get real hyped up on like sports legacies and sports dynasties and all that stuff. And like, And the history of all that's like really cool. And I don't know a ton about sports myself. I've just recently kind of gotten into, you know, all different kinds more than the last couple of years. But it's, in my mind, it's just like, you know, you can have a legacy, you can have a history, whatever. But it just matters about who's playing well on that specific day.
Yep.
And whatever happens, like, you know, they earned it. Like, it's just is what it is.
It is. Well, welcome back, people who just checked out when we started talking about sports. If you want to hear about music, we're getting into it here in a minute. But yeah, I love sports, and I can talk about sports all the time. It's amazing. It's fun.
It's fun.
And love playing sports, love watching sports, talking about sports, conspiracy theorizing about things.
Yeah.
All those things.
Radio.
All those things are on the on the table. But let's talk about you, man. You're from Minnesota, right?
Yeah, I grew up in a town maybe 20 minutes outside the Twin Cities in Minnesota. Grew up there. I lived in Minnesota my whole childhood, just, you know, doing whatever. And I played in a lot of really bad punk bands, metal bands, you name it. Like probably some rap projects in there or something. I don't know. But and then I moved to Canada at one point for school. I moved to LA after that for a while. And then after getting married, we came down here to Nashville, and we've been here for the last 3 years, and we're planning on staying because we just are going to be buying a house next week. So, I mean, we're planting down our roots here, I think.
Well, we were talking about that earlier, but man, to buy a house in Nashville, that's like hard to do.
Yeah. We probably put in about, I think it was our sixth or seventh offer before it finally stuck. Just everything was either a multi-offer thing where just people were just scrambling over houses, like I told you before, and or just like someone would outbid us by like way over the asking price of the house, or it was just too expensive for us in general. So like, but finally, I mean, we found something and it worked out, and so we're excited to be, you know, have a place of our own to actually, you know, do what we want with. So,
so you married a Canadian girl, right?
I did.
So how did y'all meet, and were you already in Canada when you met her, or did you go up there because of her, or how was that?
So, an interesting story. I actually was dating a different Canadian girl, moved to Canada to go to school. Like, I was going to Canada kind of for school, kind of for the girl. You know, my parents wanted me to go up there for school because I wanted to, you know, do the whole band thing, do music. And of course my mom was like, you know, we really want you to have like a backup career. And so I thought I was going to go to nursing school because I had worked in nursing homes, and I thankfully didn't get into nursing school. Or maybe not thankfully, I don't know. But, then I told them, well, I could do like, I'd been like sort of semi producing some local bands at that time. And I was like, maybe I could go into audio engineering. And my parents, for whatever reason, thought that that was a quote unquote safer career choice than music, which is hilarious. Sorry, Mom, but it's funny. So anyway, they were willing to send me up there for school. And anyway, so I went for this other girl, and she broke up with me like maybe a month after I moved there. And so here I am, like, like 19, living in Canada by myself. And I was just like, well, yes, I'm just going to do this school thing. So I worked really hard all year. And then towards the end of the year, towards the summer of the next year, I met this girl at church, and she was actually with one of my other friends at the time. And, so anyway, that didn't really pan out, and we just kind of kept in touch. And then, you know, we actually got engaged really quick because, you know, we kind of knew if we wanted to do this thing right, we were gonna have to decide, make this commitment, because like commit to something, because I had to move back to the States, you know. So we just decided like let's give it a whirl. And so Shauna and I got engaged like within like a month, and then we went through the whole green card thing, and we've been married almost 3 years, and have a 1-year-old boy. And so it worked out, I guess.
So who had to get the green card? She did, or you did?
She did. Okay. Yeah. Cause she is living here, obviously. Okay. So yeah, we had to, you know, hundreds or maybe even thousands of dollars later, and hundreds of pages of paperwork, and many, many months we've, you know, finally she's legal. She's legal here. We did it the long and legal way, and it was a pain, but I get to keep her down here, so it's all right.
Well, I'm a product of that situation. My mom and dad did the same thing.
Okay.
My mother's German, so she was over here. Yeah. So
okay.
That's,
I didn't know that.
Yep. I'm like Roman is. I'm thank God.
Yeah. You just yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so are you? You're not a double citizen, are you?
No.
Okay.
Because my mom was over here as a exchange student.
Oh, okay.
And she was trying to stay best she could, and met my dad, and then she did stay. She didn't want to go back. She didn't want to go back. She wanted to live in America.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So.
And so she got a green card and all that stuff?
Yes. Okay. Now she's a U.S. citizen.
Gotcha.
Or what is she now? She dual citizen or U.S. citizen? She's one of those.
Okay.
But I know she went to Memphis a bunch, and did all that. So yeah, but she can vote now, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So she would be a citizen in one way or another. Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah, my wife can't vote. She can just complain about the political climate.
Okay.
Yeah. So we get more of that. Yeah.
No, my mama, I think she's not a, yeah, I know she can vote now.
Okay.
But I don't know if she did or not, but whatever.
That's a long process too, become a citizen.
Took her like a year or two.
I think you have to be here for like 5 years before you can even become one, and then it's the whole paperwork and testing and all that stuff.
She had to take a bunch of tests. Yeah. It was not, she was here for maybe 23 or 4 or 5 years, but then decided to become a citizen.
I always wondered what like the questions would be like on those tests. Like,
dude, we would fail.
Who was the third president? Is it like that kind of stuff? Who was the third president? Or is it like, you know, actually like really, you know, like tax law or something? I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? I couldn't even pass a driver's test right now if I had to.
Yeah.
I'm so horrible at that.
When you took your driver's test, did you pass the first time?
No.
Really?
Uh-uh.
How many times did it take?
Two.
Okay. Well, that's not that bad.
But I'm a crappy student in general. And like, our driver's test is supposed to be really easy, and I still failed it. This is the computer. I'm not talking about the actually driving part.
Oh, okay.
I can freaking drive. I mean, totally. I'm a redneck from South Nashville at heart, so I could drive anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't pass a written test.
Right.
So,
See, I'm proud of myself, and I don't know why I'd be proud of my driving knowledge by any means, but I remember when I was living in California for a little bit, I had to get my license renewed there. And I hadn't, you know, learned about driving rules for like, you know, 4 years or 5 years at that point. And I remember I took the written test or whatever they had for you, which I was like, I didn't know this was coming. And I think I only missed one. So I was pretty proud of myself for just kind of, you know, just trying to assume how Californians drive and just go with it. Like, who, you know, what do you do in this situation? If someone cuts you off, what do you do? You know,
flick them off.
B, you know, honk your horn. C, go quietly. And obviously, you just do everything that's aggressive because that's California driving. But
that's good stuff, man. Because like, oh, I don't like tests at all. Or auditions, by the way. I hate auditions too,
dude. Like music auditions.
Yeah, any kind of audition.
Awful.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. What have you, like, what's your worst audition story?
Okay, college.
Okay.
The music program in college, where you have to, at MTSU is where I was doing. And it was, like, one of those things where, like, okay, hot shot jazz band drummer, freaking whatever, got my own band.
Yeah.
Thought I was going to be fine. You know what I mean? Like, all that. Marching band for 7 years. Like, I thought I knew my stuff.
Yeah.
And, but our program was, I don't know. I'm not. I didn't take full advantage of the program to learn everything I could have learned when it comes to reading. So I wasn't like, I can read music, but I'm not like great at it in no means.
Yeah.
Like I know all the note values and where they are on the staff, and I can kind of figure out what's going on.
But just
real
like
slow.
Sight reading.
My wife can sight read. I can't do that crap.
Yeah.
But she's a piano player, and sight reading's more legit on a piano.
Totally.
At least you know what I mean. But so. I got this thing. It was like, okay, here's your date. You have like 3 weeks and here's all this stuff that you gotta, you know, now I'm talking about like drums here, play one of these three drum solos.
Yeah.
Reading, you know what I mean? Like snare drum, right?
Yep.
So, which now, honestly, the irony is like, I do this kind of stuff for fun, like learning that kind of stuff.
Totally.
But at the time I was like, screw that. You know what I mean? I want to play Freebird, you know, like, or whatever, or
yeah,
I just thought I was good enough to skate around at all.
Did you? But you really liked Neil Peart?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
I don't love Neil Peart. I respect Neil Peart, but I'm more of a like a Steve Gadd, John Bonham kind of like guys that play.
That's
on,
good. That's good.
Play on that kind of stuff. The older I get, the more I like the guys that play on the records.
Okay,
because that's what I want to do.
You liked. Are you a Bernard Purdy fan?
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like that's in my, that's what
Woo!
I'm talking about. Yeah.
Whoo!
Yeah. That sounds awesome. So Purdy and Steve Jordan, Steve Gadd, Larry London, you know, these type of guys, you know, Russ Kunkel, like guys that were playing on the records is what, like, to me is the juice. Picaro. Anyway, so I show up there and it's like, you got to play a freaking timpani, which I've never done in my life. You had to play mallets with two mallets in each hand, which I've never done in my life. And you have to do the snare drum stuff. And brother, and there's a drum set part. I crashed and freaking burned. Like, man, completely. Because you have the head of the percussion department that you're auditioning for.
Yep.
And plus maybe one or two jabrones right there with him. And it was like, it was crazy. Basically, he was really nice about it, but I still crashed and burned. He even still let me in the program.
Okay.
Because of recommendation I had. I had this long recommendation letter from my instructor who he knew real well or whatever. And so he was going to let me in regardless. But basically, he told me I crapped a bed on the audition and that I need to learn this and this over the summer before I come back. And so I took that as like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And completely backed out of it altogether and went music business. Because I didn't think that I was the type of, I didn't think I was a good enough percussionist to be in a college percussion program.
Right.
So that's,
what college you go to?
MTSU.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some really great, talented guys that would come in there and that were built for that program, you know?
Yeah.
And that they really wanted it. And like, I didn't, I didn't even want to go to college in the first place.
Yeah.
So anyway, all that to say, I hate auditions. I'm still scarred from that. I'll do them. Yeah. But this is like how auditions are. Like, now I know. I'm like, okay, if you're the guy that that so-and-so is going to like how you play,
yeah,
that's going to happen because of how you play, not because of whether or not you learn the song 100% correctly.
Or just because of how you are as a person. I mean, like, playing obviously needs to be there, but like,
yeah,
it's totally personality too. Like, my worst audition was, it was actually like, I think it was a year and a half ago. I was auditioning for, I think it was guitar for some, like, you know, new pop artist or something that was coming out of LA or somewhere at New York. I don't know. Anyway, I remember I like learned all the songs. I was just like, yeah, this will be fine. It's not that hard. Got to do some background vocals, whatever. And I just went in and I was just, for some reason, I just like, my brain just got the best of me, and like the first song went okay, like I played everything good, and they're like, yeah, cool, man, that's great. And then I got into the second song and one of my cables malfunctioned, and from there on out I just like was in my head and like playing the wrong notes and like singing bad stuff, and just like I just felt like such an idiot. And like, yeah, it's just kind of that feeling, like you said, like you just are like, whatever, I don't want to do this anymore. You just feel so, I think I got in my car and cried. I was just like, do I suck that bad? And then I like talked to a few people about it, and they're just like, bro, it happens. Like, it just, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. It does. And like, great players go through rough patches or whatever, and like, that's fine. And not every gig is your gig, which
totally.
Is, you know, my buddy Terrence is always telling me, you know, and so that's it. Everybody has a horrific audition story, but we are in this crazy business of basically welcoming judgment and saying, here, judge how I play and decide if you like it. And, you know, that's the nature of the beast. So, but like you said, it's personality driven. It should be a given that if you show up to audition, you know how to play your instrument well and you know the songs. And then it becomes like the finer points of, does a guy look the part? Does the guy, is he a good hang? That kind of thing.
Right.
So what brought you to California? Like, what was that part of your life?
Yeah, well, before we came to Nashville, I mean, like I'd said before, I kind of grew up playing in all sorts of bad, you know, bands or whatever, and thought we were going to, you know, do the whole band touring thing. It just never happened because I was either always like chasing some girl, or I was, you know, convinced I needed to be a nurse or whatever. So, After I went to school, and actually while I was engaged to Shauna, I moved to LA because I was going to get into like film sound, like both on the post-production and like on the film set. So I did a lot of boom operating. I did a lot of sound mixing on sets. I did a lot of like post, like sound design and like, you know, mixing the films after they were shot and cleaning up the dialogue and stuff. And actually, like, it was pretty fun. Like, I'd worked with, like, some cool people. Like, at one point we got to do this one shoot with Matt Damon, which was really cool. And I felt really awkward going up to him and being like, hey, so, I need to slide this, you know, under your shirt and like put this mic on your, you know, your lapel or whatever it was. And he was just like, yeah, man, whatever. Like, so like, I got to meet some people that like, you know, I never thought I would meet, like him. And then we did like this one commercial with William Shatner. And he was a trip, man. He was freaking wild, but, just like a strange dude, but it was fun. And, so yeah, it was just like getting to do those things with like big household names was kind of always like a little like exciting, like not that, you know, they're any different than any of us, but just, it was like, you know, it's just someone you maybe grew up hearing their name or knowing about them. And so you're just like, wow, like we're actually getting to work with this guy or whatever. So that was cool. And also just like I said, doing some of the post-production stuff. So I'd like get to design weird sounds for like sci-fi shows or whatever. And so I did that for a while, and then just kind of the work ran dry, and I decided, well, I can either like work really hard at this and make this my career, which can be a great career. Like people make really good money doing it and it's cool. But I just kind of opted. I was like, you know what? My friend Jack Vondracek, who engineered and produced my record that's coming out, he and I played in bands together growing up for a long time. He's still in Minneapolis. And he does a lot of producing and engineering up there and plays in a band himself, plays guitar, for a band called Denny that's up there. But his old band had come through on tour, and I saw them with, they were on tour with Dave Elkin's new project that he had, that Schematic one. I don't know if you remember that one. They were doing kind of their US tour thing a few years back, and I just saw them and I was kind of like, man, like this is what, like, I, you know, I used to do this. Why am I not doing this anymore? I love it. You know, I love the playing, the writing, the, just the whole thing. And so like, I was like, you know, I can stay in LA and try to do this where it's really expensive and where I be really hard to raise a family, or I can go somewhere else and try to do it. And everyone had been talking about Nashville at the time and how it was, you know, more affordable, which a few years ago it was, but
yeah, it's competing now, isn't it?
Yeah. But so we came here, and you know, that's kind of been the thing now. But yeah, I remember when I first got here, my rent was pretty cheap, and you know, if I hadn't signed like a good consistent lease, like I'm pretty sure people are paying a couple hundred more a month than for the same kind of place than I was when I got here. So good, got in at an okay time, I guess. But
so did you and Shauna come down here together, or how'd that work?
Yeah.
Were you already married?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We got married. Actually, we moved to Nashville like a week or two after we got married. After LA, I went to Minnesota. Shauna's green card thing came through. She moved to Minnesota as well. We had the wedding on August 25th, and then we had our honeymoon for a couple days, which we just went to my grandparents' cabin, which was super low key and funny. And then we, what am I trying to say? We got married. Sorry, my brain just went somewhere. We got married. We started looking for apartments, and then we moved down here on like September 9th 13? Or something.
2013. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep. So, or yeah, sorry, of 2013 was when all this was happening. So, yeah, I mean, we were married, newlyweds in a new town with no family or friends down here. Like, I really didn't know anyone, and neither did she. Like, I had, like, one acquaintance or two acquaintances, but I didn't know them very well. And honestly, just, you know, it was kind of hard at first just being, you know, alone, even with each other in a new town, just like, you know, broke and just trying to figure out what the heck we're doing and trying to figure out what marriage even is like, when you're not, you know, living at your parents' house for 2 weeks. So, yeah. And then we started going to our church down in Brentwood and just met a lot of friends through there, and it just kind of spread. And, you know, now we've been here 3 years, and it's just, you know, we definitely feel very at home. We have, you know, so many close friends here, or even not like super close friends, but just tons of acquaintances and friends, you know, that we've just built a very nice, you know, group of people that we just, you know, we know that, you know, that we love and they love us, and especially at our, you know, church, and then also like at the places we work or worked, there's just people who support us and we support them, and just, I don't know. Yeah, we definitely feel very at home now that we've been here for a few years. And so we're, like I said before, we're just glad to be kind of planting our roots here, buying a house and all that stuff. So
cool, man. Well, you've done a lot in 3 years. So how'd you end up at, I assume you're talking about Community Bible Church?
Yeah.
Yep. How'd you end up there?
It was through our pastor in Minnesota, the pastor of the church my parents go to still. And he had just said, hey, like I've heard there's a church down in south of Nashville that, you know, I have some mutual friends or connections or whatever that have, you know, either were part of the leadership or were at least familiar with it. And so he just said, you should check it out. And so we went there, and like at first we were just kind of like, I don't know. It was like really different from what we were used to, which now I think is a good thing, personally. But yeah, we're very grateful to have ended up there, not only because of the friends we've made there, but just because the our pastors there have just been incredibly, you know, supportive of us, just like they are with everyone else, and are just very, like, you know, just soaking us in the gospel week in, week out, and just really allows us to rest in, you know, Christ, and just to, you know, have, they're not, you know, beating us over the head. They're reminding us of the rest that we have, and, you know, the finished work, which is actually this tattoo on my arm was the first one I got when I was 18 or something. And it's Greek and it means it is finished. And so like, it's just like, was also my reminder to remember. Cause I'm definitely a person that puts a lot of pressure on myself. I think a lot of people do this, just like trying to work towards something, trying to be something in different ways. And I think it's easy to apply that to, you know, religion or your faith as well in Christianity. And so like, to remember that it's done is the most, you know, it's been done for you. You're good is a very restful thing to know, you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And so then you met Callie and Reed and Danny and all them. Is that how that goes?
Yeah. Yeah. We started going to kind of the young adult thing or whatever was going on there. Yeah. Met Reed first, I remember I thought he was like super cool when I met him, and then I got to know him, and he's like a huge nerd and game, you know, board games and stuff. But he and I have become and remained really tight friends, the last couple of years. And same with Danny. Like I met Danny through I might've met you there too. There's some get together at the Cryer's house. And I remember seeing you there. This was like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, they were cooking
gumbo.
Yeah, and that's...
And I was just down there again on Sunday on Father's Day for more gumbo. And so it's so good.
Yeah, they know how to do it.
But yeah, I met all those guys. And so... and then that's how I got acquainted with y'all's band too, Vespers. And I've been to a couple of y'all's shows and always enjoy it. It's always a great show.
Well, I appreciate that, bud.
The drums are average.
Especially horrible. Look like I failed an audition or two.
Yeah, yeah. You look like an MTSU drummer.
Yeah, dropout. Because that's what I am.
There you go.
I'm
oh, okay.
Freaking dropout. So.
Oh, man.
No, I love it. I'm proud to be a dropout.
I just listened to Kanye West's College Dropout record today.
Well, so there you go. He's my fellow college dropout.
We've hit full circle.
There you go.
Up front.
So, let's talk about what was like your first jobs like here in town.
Yeah. Man, I have some bad memories about that sort of, when I first moved to town, we lived in an apartment up by Hermitage, which for those of you who aren't familiar, perhaps it's like a little bit east of town, northeast-ish, like 10 minutes out of town. Anyway, so lived up there, and I was just trying to get a job. Like, I didn't really know what things were like down here. I didn't really know what was going on. You know, I knew I wanted to do music stuff, but I also had just gotten married, so I was like, let's make some cash. And the other thing is my wife couldn't work because she had a 3-month, like, waiting period essentially because of her green card stuff. So
that is weird. I did not know that.
Yeah. So basically she didn't work until she couldn't work until like January. So, and we moved there in September. So it was basically, you know, it was me and nothing else. So I just kind of, I had a history in working with like old people, elderly people. And, so I ended up getting a job managing a home for like handicapped people, essentially, like people with just like different diagnoses of, you know, the mind or whatever. And so I managed a home of two guys that lived there and made very little money to do what I would assume is a very important job. And honestly, the company I worked for really sucked. They were just like not very good to their workers, and me included. Like, I had to work a lot of overtime, and which I guess is fine, but when you're not making much anyway, it's kind of a drag, and they just expected a lot a lot out of you for very little. So I got so stressed out about that job because it was just so much that I ended up having to quit, and I found a job working in an office as a scheduling person, doing scheduling for other people to essentially kind of do what I was doing with a different clientele, but like scheduling people to go work in people's homes. So I did that for a couple months. And then actually the funny thing is my wife, when she could work, got hired by the same office, and she actually took my old job when I left that job to go on this tour playing bass for this country artist that I played for a little bit. So I didn't do that much in Nashville before like jumping into music stuff more. I definitely had that first like 6 months or so where I really wasn't doing anything music related, and I was just kind of burnt out and tired, and like I just didn't really know what was going to happen, and I just felt really bummed. And then it was actually my wife, Shauna, who was kind of like, you need to, like, you know, you brought me down here to do this thing. Like, you better start trying to do something. And so, I started trying, and then, you know, wouldn't you know, like at least something small started happening. And that's when I took that tour playing bass for this gal. And then I did that for about a month. And then I actually got a call from Reed, who we were talking about earlier, and the artist he works for needed someone to do some tech stuff for them. And so I've done that for a couple of years as well. You know, just going on the road with them and doing, you know, just tech work and working on guitars and stuff like that. So that's kind of been my main, bread and butter for a couple of years. And it's been a really good time, good experience, good people. But this past year and a half, I've really hit hard the writing side of things. And, particularly this year, especially, I've been hitting the artist, you know, my own music and my own artistry really hard, and trying to like make that a thing, and really do that. 'Cause I just haven't really done that heavily since I was playing in my bad pop punk bands in, you know, when I was 17, 18. So like, you know, I'm 24 now, and I just was kind of like, I don't want to let my you know, 20 slip by and not like really give it my best effort, you know? So it's kind of where I'm at now. And I still do touring. I'm just getting ready to put out a new record. Kind of my first real, what I would consider my first like real solo record, next month on July 12th. And then I also do some other little stuff in between. Like I'll play, you know, in the band for other people. Like I'll play bass or drums for other people, or I'll do like just the other day I did a random, you know, sound gig for this like private house party thing. And it was just like super funny and like a weird situation. Like, but it was a lot of fun, and, you know, got some free food and free drinks and whatever. And so just random little things like that, or even like, I'll just like, I try to have as many ways to make money while I'm doing this stuff as possible. Like I'll do Uber sometimes, or I'll do like random online stuff that's like weird, and just grinding it by, man.
Hey man, I respect that. I know that hustle.
Yeah.
Very well. And admire you for just hitting it head on, man, because it's like there ain't no sponsors, there ain't no rich parents, there ain't none of that going on right now, is it?
I mean, not really. I mean, my parents are pretty much, yeah, I mean, they've kind of let us do our thing. I mean, they help us out if we're in dire need, or if we're, right, you know, with moving into a house, they're excited. So they're, and of course, because we have a kid, you know, they're, you know, oh, you need this furniture. And we're like, hey, you know, bring it on, bring on the free goods. But we're, you know, yeah, we are not living high on the hog. That's for sure. No. We're just kind of doing our thing.
But that's how it is at first. And makes for good stories, man. Because, yeah, like, when you do get somewhere, you can, like, just be like, look how good God is. Brought us, yeah, from nothing. So,
and hopefully, you know, if something like that occurs, you know, you remember that.
Yeah.
You remember, mm-hmm, how hard it can be. And you don't take anything good that happens for granted, you know? And, like, or if you do get to a position where you're, you know, have some clout and you see someone else who's in your previous position, that you know, can support them in that and not be a hot shot.
Yeah. You could help, just help, you know,
yeah,
be a support, like you said, and help get them to the next step. Cause, right, you've seen the movie before, you know what it's going to take.
Totally.
You know? And so, what kind of stuff, like, is your favorite stuff to listen to? Cause I think that's an easier question to answer than, like, what does your music sound like?
Right, yeah.
What's some of the music that inspires you that you've listened to most of your life?
I mean, it's changed. Like, I don't necessarily gravitate towards one kind. Like, a lot of people say that, and I mean, it's just kind of is the case for a lot of people. I mean, one day I can be listening to, you know, Kanye West, like I said today, and the last bit, I've been listening to a lot of hip hop and a lot of R&B and stuff. But then, you know, a few months ago, I was listening to just a lot of even just like mainstream pop, or I got into this Bieber phase. I got to admit it. I was listening to the new Bieber record, or that band, the 1975. Like, I was really into them for a second. Or last year, it was just Ryan Adams on repeat all the time. And so, like, it just changes. Like, growing up, it was, I actually was just talking to someone else about this recently. Growing up, like, it was just kind of what my parents listened to at first. Like, my mom was like, you know, Stephen Curtis Chapman, you know, all that stuff. Like, just kind of the CCM. And she'd like, or like, my stepdad would be listening to, like, what did he listen to? He loved, like, ABBA, and he loved, like, Jennifer Lopez and stuff. Wow. My dad would listen to like Pearl Jam and stuff like that. And so there's all these different sides that I'd hear little bits of. And then it eventually, like, you know, I got into high school and I started, you know, listening to what my friends were listening to. So there was like, you know, people like Reliant K were doing their thing, or Switchfoot or whatever. Just all those kind of pseudo sort of Christian-ish rock bands, you know, that your parents thought it was okay to listen to, but you still thought it sounded cool, you know. And then like eventually I started just kind of listening to the radio, and it was, or I guess I really started getting into that, like, more like diverse music in like 2004, which was when, so I was here in like Weezer, like they had, Beverly Hills was huge at that point. And then like Kanye's, Gold Digger was big at that point. Green Day was a huge thing and I loved them for a hot minute. Had their poster on my wall and everything. And so there's just all these different bands and like, I kind of just liked whatever was popular. Kelly Clarkson, man, I loved it. Behind These Hazel Eyes, Since You've Been Gone. But, and then eventually, you know, I started playing in my own bands and writing my own music and I started getting into like different stuff. And whether it was like, I actually like went through more of like a punk or like a metal type, like hard music type phase. And I listened to a lot of that kind of stuff and it just changed. And the, you know, every hardcore kid goes out of hardcore into like indie. And so then you do that and you really think you like Bon Iver, but then you just fall asleep to it. And then, yes, so now it's just kind of whatever feels good. Like, it's just like, I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to take it in as an influence, like, and hopefully some small piece of that can, like, if I like it, can, like, come out of just, you know, whatever.
Well, I love that, man. It's a diverse sound emporium you got there.
Yeah, and the stuff I'm putting out probably sounds nothing like any of these bands I'm talking about, but just like, yeah.
That's a good thing, man. So your guy produced it. Did he do it here or in Minnesota?
Minnesota, actually. Yeah, it's funny.
How'd you do that?
People were giving me grief because like, they're like, you live in Nashville and then you went back to, you know, your little Minnesota to make your record. But I was like, man, whatever. So yeah, I went up, me and my wife and my son, who at the time was like 6 months old or 7 months old, we drove up to Minnesota in February and, I just had blocked out a few days to work with Jack. And so we just kind of planned out, okay, we only had a limited amount of time, but we were just like, okay, we'll knock out all the drums, you know, this day we'll knock out, you know, as much as we can of this and that and this and that. So, yeah, we just kind of hit it hard and went, we planned enough, but didn't plan too much. Like, we just kind of let it be free. Like we weren't specific about, you know, what parts needed to be played where and here. We were just kind of like, this is the song. Here's the vibe. Let's just see what happens with it. And like, so it was just all, it was very like, I hate this word, but it was very organic in the sense it was just kind of like, who knows? So like the songs in my head were way different than they came out, which is probably a good thing. But yeah, we tracked most of it, like most of the big stuff, guitars, drums, bass and stuff at a studio in Minneapolis called the Petting Zoo. And then we did some of the more like production elements and vocals at Jack's home studio, which he calls Roosevelt Recordings, and we named that. He and I actually started that studio when we were like 16, and we were, you know, recording with GarageBand and the internal mic on an iMac, you know how it goes, and tracking drums through the internal mic on an iMac, and it sounds really good. But so yeah, we started that, and then he just kind of kept it going. But and then yeah, I brought my friend Josh Suddeth, who's a producer and mixer down here. He did all the post stuff for me, and we actually, and the only other, like everything was just really done in those couple spots except for one of my friends, Zach, tracked a guitar solo on it, but we just did that in his apartment. And then one guy that I don't know him at all flew in a saxophone solo, but we just kind of threw that in, but I actually don't know him, so good work on your solo. I can't remember your name, but it's on the CD, back of the CD somewhere. But yeah, it was like a really like just laid back process, and I tried to keep it like that where it wasn't too, I wanted it to be just like the record was gonna feel, just kind of like weird and like kind of like just very like whatever happens is gonna have, like, I don't know, I just always like to approach music not too formulaically, because it can just become difficult and like, I don't know, just kind of boring to me personally. Just I like the freedom to just let something special happen in the moment, I guess. But
well, that's what's up, man. So it's coming out on July 12th. Is that right?
Yep. July 12th. And I've already put out a single that's called I Don't Really Care. That's been out. So I kind of did a soft release of that back in March. It's on Spotify and iTunes and Apple Music and all that good stuff. This is my first attempt doing like a Kickstarter thing, and I hated it.
That's a little awkward.
I don't think I'll ever do one again.
Have you got to where you had to send stuff out?
I just did it, and I didn't mind like packaging everything, but I also did it really badly. Like I got really big boxes for like a CD and a poster. So like it was stupid and like it cost a lot more than I thought. Like I wish I had budgeted it better, but I just remember sending it out and I was like, really? Mm. Like it's just a lot. But yeah, so but all that got done somehow, thankfully, and yeah, the full record. I mean it's not a full record in length. I guess you'd say it's the length of an EP, but I wanted it to function more like a full record because it's like a concept. So like there's 9 tracks, but several of them are like little story interlude type things. Like I took a lot of influence from hip hop and rap on that department because I love how in that kind of music, there's just, especially those records, you just like, there's like this constant theme throughout. Right. And so like, and carrying of a story. And so I love those just like on the Kendrick Lamar stuff or like even some of the Drake stuff, like they do a lot of that. And I don't know. I just always thought that was cool. And so even though we only did 4 real songs, we threw in a lot of tracks to like really push in the story of this release. And so, yeah, July 12th we're doing a big release show thing for it through, well, I guess they haven't announced it yet, so I'm not supposed to say. Well, no, they will have announced it by the time that this come out. So we're doing it through Causa Scene. It's going to be really fun. I'm sure the details will be online by the time, you know, people are hearing this. But there will be limited tickets. So if there's some still available, snatch them up. There's a couple other artists opening. Jessica Mack is a kind of pop folk artist who's opening, and then also Luke Levinson, a kind of a pop guy, and they're both really good. So and then we're playing full band, you know, full whatever, man, going all out. So if y'all can make it, and also you, if you want to come hang, man,
yeah, I'd love to.
You should. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Who's in your band?
I mean, it changes because obviously I'm hiring different people, but they're all my friends, so it'll be fun. The guy who mixed it, actually Josh, he's gonna be playing drums, and his wife Mary Beth is gonna be doing some background vocals. My friend Blaine Reedy, a really good bass player, is gonna play bass, and then my friend Zach Terry, who did one solo on the record, guitar solo, is gonna be doing the guitar stuff, and then that's it. I think just 4 and me. So
sweet, bro.
We'll be seeing what happens. I'm going to try to figure out how to rig up some backtracks and all that good stuff, mm-hmm. and really make it a pop show, man. So we'll see how it goes. But
well, sweet. Well, what are you calling it?
What am I calling it?
The record.
The record? Oh. So it's called, it's kind of a weird name. People kind of say it's creepy, but it's called I Know Everything That You've Done. And it, like I was saying, it's kind of a concept record. It's like, basically, the whole concept is there's a lot of things in our culture that are really destructive to us and the people around us, but they're often just considered like normal, or if not normal, just maybe kind of like a taboo part of life. So, because I just, especially in like America, I just feel like, and just the West in general, I think we just see so much like affluence and like self-reliance, and it just becomes so, just people are very like okay with whatever they do. And so there's just like each song kind of tackles a different subject. Like one song is talking about like porn and just kind of womanizing, and another song is talking about like the social media narcissism culture and just how that can be so just weird. And then one's about adultery, and another's about, you know, addiction, alcoholism and stuff. And so this just kind of carries this story of, so it's laid out in a story format where at the beginning you're kind of hearing this like family just carrying on about their day, and then all of a sudden you like in the story of the woman, like you hear her leave, and then all of a sudden you go into this song about, you know, porn. And all this is sung in first person. Like I wanted it to be like it was me singing about all this stuff, because that's part of the point of the record, is not only like a pointing a finger at people doing stuff, it's a I know, not only because I'm seeing you do it, but because I know my own heart and it's bad, and like maybe I haven't done all of the things stated like myself physically, but in my heart I know I'm capable of it, or I know I've done those things in my like, or like I've had the desire, you know what I mean? So like, just like Jesus said, you know, like if you look at a woman with lust, it's adultery. So, you know, if you look at porn, you've just committed adultery,
mm-hmm.
you know? So yeah. So it just carries on the story. It's like this guy, and he gets caught in one thing, and then you see him get caught up in his own pride. You see him get caught up in, you know, a very, you know, unfazed affair, just like I don't care, you know, and addiction, whatever. And then just the story kind of, I guess I'll kind of leave it hanging, because, you know, listen to the record and you'll kind of see how it ends and how destructive that is, and kind of finish out that story there. But yeah, I know everything that you've done is the title. And yeah, I'm really excited to get it out. I've really put every little bit of myself into it, both artistically and on the business end and financially. And I mean, I guess the Kickstarter did most of it, but yeah, it's regardless, it's still been a lot of outpouring into it. And like, I'm proud of it. Like I think a lot of people, like, you know, when they talk about their record, it's kind of like, oh man, yeah. But like, I legitimately am proud of the work I put into it. I think it sounds like really good, and I'm excited for other people to hear it. And I'm hoping that that'll create some excitement about it, and that, you know, on my next release I can really dig into some stuff, and like hopefully people will care to hear about it. So
absolutely, man. Well, I think they're gonna care about it.
I hope so.
We'll do our best to get as many people talking about it as we can.
Yeah, man.
And go from there, dude.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for hitting me up, dude. I wasn't even aware of the timeline and
and
all that. So
it just kind of popped into my head. I think I was just like creeping on your Twitter or something. I don't even know if I follow you on Twitter right now, but like I'm going to as soon as I leave. But like I think I just like for some reason I just was got led there through the webs of the internet.
And, yeah, of course.
And I remember, I'm like, yeah, that's right, Taylor does that podcast. And I was just thinking of different ways I could, you know, get a couple different outlets to talk about this record. And mm-hmm. I thought, I don't know, hit them up. And I was...
Never hurts, bro.
I was super glad that
honestly, it makes me happy whenever anybody hits me up about to schedule one, because that's one week that I don't have to do it.
Right.
I don't have to schedule.
And it was fun, though, man. Like, I'm glad, like, I mean, like you said at the beginning, like, we've met, but we've never really gotten together. Uh-uh. And so it's just been good to chat and hang out, and, you know,
yeah,
we'll just have to keep doing that.
Absolutely. And like, you know what I'm saying, if you ever need a drummer, call me.
So oh, 100%.
That's the way we'll do it.
MTSU.
Yeah, I've succeeded.
You did it.
Dude, I gotta tell you, man, when we were first leaving and I dropped out of school and we went on the road, and like whatever ounce of success we thought we had, I was like sticking it up that guy's rear end because he made me feel like I sucked. And I was like,
but you know what?
Yeah. Like the first time we sold out a building, I was like, so what if I couldn't do that sight reading?
We just sold it out.
The crap still stays with you. Isn't that funny?
That's amazing.
You know, it's stupid, but it stays with you.
Dude,
but
that's awesome.
It's just a comedy now, bro. I look back, it's like just hilarious. But
that's great.
Brother, I appreciate you. Like I said, I can't wait to hear the whole thing. And
yeah, man, I'll send it your way.
I'd love to. If we are in Nashville that night, we will be there. And
cool.
I have to check because I think I have a thing on that time. But if I'm not, freaking, we would love to come. Basement East? Or where are you doing it at?
Venue's not.
Oh, okay.
They're waiting to release it till they announce.
Okay.
Or it might. I think. They might be treating it as a secret show.
Oh, okay.
So,
that's right. Okay, cause sweet.
Because I know.
Larry, man. Larry's got to come on my podcast, dude. We were the second band to ever play Cosmosine. So.
Yeah?
Yes, sir.
Oh, man. I think I had actually talked to Callie. I was like, maybe, are y'all interested in playing with me on this at all? And I think y'all were busy doing something, so I was bummed out. But,
we've had that kind of a year, bro.
Yeah.
Everything, every cool opportunity that's like. Been possible. We haven't been able to.
I mean, I'm not very cool anyway, so like, I don't know.
No, trust me. We would love to do something that we don't have to promote and just have a reason to play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it's a secret show, then like, you know, the thing that's exhausting about playing in Nashville is promoting.
Yeah, 100%.
But Larry's developed a network now where
it's
like,
really cool.
You know, but I remember when it first started. I mean, it was like, you know, I need to call Larry. I'm just bad about it.
I finally just met him in person at some event recently. Like, I had talked to him on email a few times, but I finally met him, and he and his beard were very friendly. And
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. Larry's a great guy, man, and like, he's done a lot the last several years.
Totally.
To,
and now they're doing that whole tour thing and everything. Pretty cool.
Yeah,
cool.
He's a very respected guy now. So.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, man. But we were the second band ever play. Serena was the first band.
Oh, really?
And,
okay.
Where
did y'all play when
too.
You did?
No, Serena played. We both played at his house.
At Larry's house.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They played the first one, and then we met him a few weeks after that. And
What year was this?
11 or 12. One of those.
Okay.
I think 12. Yeah, it had to be 12. So Serena played it early into the year, maybe the back end of 11. And we had played it shortly thereafter because we went to see Seren play and Larry was there. And
gotcha.
Evidently he had already sort of either been in contact with my brother or knew our stuff already.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those things where it worked out nice. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And seems like everybody's played at Larry's house now.
Yeah. I don't think this one will be there.
No, I doubt it. He's doing it less and less at his house now.
Yeah, I know. I think I know where it's going to be, but they haven't announced it yet, so...
Don't worry about
it. We'll see.
We'll figure it out. That's why it's called a secret show, people. Well, brother, it's been a pleasure. We'll wrap this thing up and head off in the sunset for the night, and man, can't wait. That's exciting times.
Thanks, man. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
It was a blast and good conversation. And
cool, man.
It was fun, man.
Well, that's what we're about here. If you like what we're doing, tell somebody. If you don't like what we're doing, just don't tell them. That's the simple cause here with the Tall Tales of Taylor Jones podcast. If you like what we're doing, please push the subscribe button and the download or whatever you do. Leave us a comment on iTunes. Rate us 5 stars. All those things help with, you know what I'm saying, my ego more or less.
And root for the 49ers.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we hadn't got there yet. we're in the dry spell now. When the NBA Finals goes off, I get sports depressed.
Because
until
you're
football comes
you're ready
back,
for September.
Yeah, but honestly, I just watch a lot of wrestling until then. That's all I do. So we'll get there though. But yeah, show the podcast some love. If you do like it, send us a encouraging thingy on there on the comments. And hey, I'd love for this thing to grow. Well, who knows what it'll do? But I like it so much right now that it doesn't really matter. It's so much fun. So. Gives us a reason to call our friends and have a real conversation. So, for Mr. Pat Killoran, I'm Taylor Jones, and we're out of here for the night. See y'all next week.